This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. The government pledges that every Malaysian will have an equal access to affordable and good quality healthcare services by both the public and private healthcare providers, which hopefully will be realised through four strategies under the 11th Malaysia Plan. We all know the plan was unveiled last Thursday, and we have in the studio with us Dr. Krishna Kumar, who is President of the Malaysian Medical Association, and Tuan Haji Rizoni Sulaiman, who is the Vice President of the Malaysian Dietitians Association. We're trying to figure out, you know, where whether or not this plan is going to make a difference or not in taking us the next 5 years to 2020, which is absolutely crucial. We plan to be a high-income nation and all of that. Well, what about our health? Will we be able to afford it? Will we be healthy enough to enjoy some of that high income that we're bringing in? Welcome to the show, gentlemen. How are you today?
Good.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to start with Dr. Krishna. How did the 11th Malaysia Plan, did it make a difference at all for you and, you know, the members of the Malaysian Medical Association?
We think there is some headway because there is some priority given about emergency care and pre-hospital care. We know this is a new area that the healthcare industry is going into, and it's a critical area where we bring in patients who are involved in emergencies and accidents. We start the treatment from the site rather than in the hospital. And this care that is given sometimes can save lives, and therefore it's very important. So it's a good thing that the government is putting emphasis on it. The second thing that the government that has proposed something very good is having equity or universal access of health to every Malaysian. Mm-hmm. And there's emphasis to give this provision of healthcare towards the rural and interiors of Malaysia. Malaysian healthcare is currently one of the best identified by WHO as 98% of the population has access to healthcare within 5 kilometres. So this is a good example. And if we further strengthen that, we hope that our healthcare remains the best in the world. But unfortunately, we have a problem. We know that they want to post specialists to the rural interior. We need to have more specialists if we want to post them there. Currently, the attrition rate is much higher than the production rate, especially in the surgical-based disciplines. So we need to do something that if we want to provide good specialist services in government hospitals, we need to make sure we have a retention package of keeping these specialists who have served the country. Their income is vastly disparing with the private sector, but most of the specialists that stay back in government service have various reasons for staying back to provide the service. So we need to make sure that these people are taken care so that they can continue to provide excellent level of service, because public healthcare service is virtually free to all Malaysians. Unfortunately, the foreigners are now jumping in to take care of that and depriving Malaysians of it, because Malaysians are now pushed towards the private sector as the hospitals get overcrowded with foreigners.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The 11th Malaysia Plan aims to have one doctor for every 400 Malaysian in the year 2020. Are we able to train, 30,000 new doctors over the next 5 years?
The thing is, we are producing more than 5,000 doctors a year. It's not the number of doctors that is important, it's the quality of the doctors that is important. There is currently only 700 posts vacant in the Ministry of Health, which will be filled up in 2 months. Where are the other people going to work? Because the public services have already announced that there's a freeze in new posts and taking up of new people. So how are we going to achieve this if you're not going to employ more people?
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. A chicken and egg situation. Yes. All right. We'll just go to the Dietitians Association. Rizoni, what is the Dietitians Association's input in the 11th Malaysia Plan?
Okay, as you know, this is called MDA, Malaysian Dietitian Association. Malaysian Dietitian Association, okay. We are really concerned about this is called a diet and lifestyle of Malaysian. Okay, when we have found, okay, from our research and finding, because we are the obese nation, mm-hmm. okay, from all the 10 Asian countries, Malaysia is the obese, and called Malaysia boleh, wrongly Malaysia boleh on the bad side. We thinking how we MDA, Malaysian Dietitian Association, to help, and we found is this called the issue even from the family itself, the person like we are the elder, okay, we're parents. When we have not have enough ideas and also knowledge about what you call balanced diet, mm-hmm. how should be the practice a good diet at home, because this may be following by our children. I can say, oh, all our mother, father, and all our sister also using all high fat, high calorie. And when they found in the school also, they, if this not being controlled, and they may follow the bad habit. That's why we have good in RMK's 11, they were the enforcement about pharmaceutical, about infection control, about food security, food safety, and food cleaning of the food. And it might be have call it enforcement, call it Peraturan Kebersihan Makanan 2009, where it should be have good practice and also balanced diet. And we found it, if we can practice at home and follow with a good example at the school canteen, where we can learn. Been sure in Japan, in Korea, they have do that. Then if we have educate this one, and they say, oh, this is easy and not difficult, it's balanced. They have rice, they have fruits, vegetables, and drinks, not too much sugar. They call it balanced diet, they don't say imbalanced one. And then they say, mother, I learned this something, and we should be prepared this one. And the mother, yes, we also together how to complete. Then it is okay. But our community also, my predictions during our festival, they have a lot of food.
Yep. Yep. But the 11th Malaysia Plan, yep, did it even address anything to do with diet? Or is it a implied thing that someone like the Malaysian Dietitians Association will work together with other stakeholders?
Yes, if we want to work together, because when they have built up another new hospital, again, they have another 6 hospital they built up, they have 100 of clinic, 1 Malaysia will be built up, okay? And that really need a resource. And we think we can offer our service as a dietitian. If they have a post for us, a dietitian, where we can go to the call it a community itself directly.
How many dietitians do you
at
have?
At the moment in government, it's only 452.
Okay.
In private, around 200 something. It's only 800. But our capacity should be as dietitian in Malaysia. Every one dietitian at least for 10,000 population. So if we have 30 million population, it should be around 4,000 something.
Right.
Yeah, so but we have only 1,800 dietitian. So this is, we are back. When we compare to Japan, we are far above below.
Okay,
on that.
We have a huge problem on our hands here. I mean, and some people may just think that, you know, dietitians, so what? They don't see the relevance or the importance of a dietitian.
Excuse me. They will be realized and looking, seeking for dietitian when they already sick.
Yes. Okay.
Problem is, Malaysians, they don't know how to prevent.
When they already sick, okay, I got cholesterol. Example, Dr. Raifa, okay, Rizoni, this person is already have high cholesterol, let me have cancer, they have so many obesity type, how many BMI at 33, they have so complication, okay, now looking for dietitian. They're too late sometimes already.
Yes.
It should before it happen, we should be looking for dietitian to get something about prevent it and good a balanced diet and good hitting the pattern for everybody.
Dr. Krishna, did previous Malaysia plans address these medical needs?
If you are talking,
are we
about
moving forward as far as the plans are concerned?
We are moving forward, but we are moving very slowly. We have decided to produce quantity. Dietitians may be lacking, but most of the professionals in the medical fraternity, that means doctors, pharmacies, and various other specialties, they are being produced in such large numbers now that they are overwhelming the service. We cannot build hospitals fast enough to cater for the number that we are producing. For a population of 30 million, we have more than 40 medical programs in the country, excluding the 350 universities that we are recognized overseas. Compared to a similar country like Australia, which also has a similar population to us, but they only have about 16 medical schools. So we are like producing three times what we need.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, we are filling the short-term shortfall of requirements, but we are not looking at quality, and we are going to see doctors being unemployed in the near future.
And does the 11 Malaysia plan address these concerns?
No, because you're only building 6 hospitals. Even if you staff the 6 hospitals, I don't think so you can increase 5,000 jobs a year for doctors. So unless they start filling up all 1 Malaysia clinics with doctors and start shift duties for doctors in these various clinics, only then can you start absorbing these numbers. If not, there'll be a huge number that will be waiting for a job or who can't get employed at all?
I'm sure consultations would have been carried out before the 11th Malaysia Plan was unveiled. Did the Malaysian Dietitians Association, were you part of that process? Did you have a wish list? Did you propose to government what you would like to see in the 11th Malaysia Plan?
Certainly. That we have also, I'll call it, asking that if the, our government to help us in one thing about this control about the unhealthy food being prepared everywhere. Because somehow, if we thinking about when we see other countries, they have no such many 24 hours restaurant all over the world. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have problem now with 24 hours.
Yes.
And it like mushroom everywhere, every corner, every housing estate, every 24 hours. And it attract people eating at 2 a.m., 1 a.m., 3 a.m. with roti canai, martabak, nasi lemak. Last time when we were kids, only we came with roti canai, nasi lemak at breakfast time. Not,
yes.
But now it will be around o'clock, be high calorie. We thinking how this enforcement together with a wish from the MDA or other association also, we thinking how we can control this one.
Was it taken into consideration in the 11th Malaysia Plan?
There's so many issues. Okay, we think about them, we discuss about God, because everybody have the priority on that. Okay, everybody have called good and bad about this one. Okay, we have still discussing what should be the best. Okay, because every problem should be have solution on that. And what is the best way in our Malaysian call it we? Okay, because we cannot just follow other country. Okay, what it should be, because if we already think about educate every people. Okay, you should be eat only at 8 o'clock p.m.
Okay. So, was your wish list taken into account in the 11th Malaysia Plan? Was anything addressed at all on, you know, healthy eating? No, obviously not. Your wish list from the Malaysian Medical Association.
We asked for some things, but I don't think so. We got, because I think the government is looking at it as an overall picture. They may have their ways of doing things. We're not saying that it's wrong. Mm-hmm. They have some good points in what they are doing. So we need to work with the government to improve. Just about 2 weeks ago, the Wilayah branch of the Malaysian Medical Association had a program with the Minister of Federal Territories, Dato' Sri Tengku Anan, where we had a session of Zumba dancing and getting everybody off their feet and exercising. Yes. And it was the initiation process, trying to get people on their feet, exercising regularly, because currently most adults are only exercising with their fingers at the computer top. So we need to get them outside, like in Tasik Titi Wangsa and Tasik Perdana and things like that, where they can go. And the Federal Territory Minister was very impressed with the crowd that came, and he actually suggested, why doesn't all the local town councils actually organize these exercise activities during weekends, especially in all the parks that are available? Maybe we can't do every park every week, but at least let us start with two in KL and two in Putrajaya a month, and we can get the community involved by getting to do more exercise to stay healthy.
We always think that the urban community is the one that is unhealthy, but you know what? The rural communities are also starting to deteriorate in terms of health. Obesity amongst the rural communities is also going up. Am I correct? Would always think that people in rural communities will be healthier.
Yeah, we assume the rural will be more active rather than this urban community. It happened. It really happened, because somehow so they also lack of exercise also. But in our concern, okay, when we see the percentage is more, because and also to make the program visibly also in the urban area more visible and also practicality. But if we already can success at the urban settlement, it's quite be okay. Now we have program, so many program in, like Dr. Krishna mentioned about my public speech. Okay, where everybody from the housing area, also the mother, the lady have be in on their threshold and be exercise. Mm-hmm. And we have called Nutrition Month Malaysia every March. Okay, we have together with Nutrition Society Malaysia and also MASO, the Malaysian Study of Obesity. We have so many programs every year to make everybody know what we are concerned about health, we are concerned about our lifestyle, we are concerned about diet and nutrition. Everybody will be make a tour. but to educate and make the message across. This is very difficult for our population. I mean, to educate and they know and practice. Because if they only know, but after 7 days, they're not practice, they're gone.
Of course. Okay. We're discussing the 11th Malaysia Plan, and as far as healthcare is concerned, if you have a question for Dr. Krishna Kumar, President of the Malaysian Medical Association, or Tuan Haji Rizzoni from the Malaysian Dietitians Association, text us on 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. We're discussing the 11th Malaysia Plan as far as healthcare is concerned. What was in it that, you know, will propel Malaysia to the year 2020? Dr. Krishna Kumar, President of the Malaysian Medical Association, and Tuan Haji Rizzoni Sulaiman, the Vice President of the Malaysian Dietitians Association, are in the studio. Now, majority of Malaysians rely on public health services for their medical needs. The government, however, now has started to reduce or remove subsidies, and of course, now we have the GST on certain health, you know, components of healthcare. How does this bode well or not for public health care funding? Well, we spoke to a couple of people on the affordability of healthcare, and this is what they had to say.
I find dentists extremely expensive these days.
Oh, the one I went to is affordable, it's free one for old people.
In certain places, yes. I think government hospitals are definitely much more affordable than private institutions.
I think at the moment it's still okay, but the things are going up slowly, and I think it'll be a big pinch, especially to the middle income group.
Okay, for me lah.
If I were to be admitted to hospital, I'm using insurance, that's why I can afford. But if it's on my own personal, I don't think I can afford it.
I rather going to general hospital lah. Kalau macam klinik tu mungkin macam kita dah teruk sangat, dia akan bagi kepada pakar kan. So kita tak mampu pakar tu kan. Jadi kadang-kadang untuk pergi ke klinik tu, kita akan fikir 2-3 kali. Eh, mahal lah klinik ni. Baik kita pergi kerajaan lah yang lagi murah. Walaupun lambat, tapi dia at least boleh mampu bagi saya yang duduk kampung murah. Lepas tu dia punya kebajikan tu dijaga lah.
Malaysians speak. it's in, without a doubt, the public sector is most affordable, but there are concerns as well as far as quality is concerned, and so people end up going to private, but at the same time it's costly. As one lady said, insurance, you know, unless there's insurance, then otherwise, you know, it can be quite, you know, expensive.
Yes.
Dr. Krishna, I mean, what are your thoughts on public care?
If you are talking currently, the quality of healthcare that is provided both in public and private is almost equitable. Unfortunately, in the public sector, we are overburdened with a larger group of patients.
Yes,
so what happens is there tends to be longer waiting times, and you don't have personalized care because specialists have to running around to see more people, so they cannot just see one person. Unlike in the private sector, they see smaller numbers, so they can afford to give personalized care.
Mm-hmm.
And because they have smaller numbers, their waiting time is much shorter. So this is the differences between the public and private sector. There are benefits and disadvantages. You have to pay if you want to go to the private sector. And as what one of the participants stated, you need to have insurance cards. Mm-hmm. And the insurance industry has done very well, and they've sold quite a lot of insurance cards to a lot of Malaysian public. And that is why more Malaysians can afford to go to the private healthcare. But with the implementation of GST affecting the cost of healthcare, we might find that some of these numbers reducing and more of the patients actually going to public sector, even further burdening the overcrowded public hospitals.
Of course, and I think we've spoken about it, that the private sector looks after about 30% of the beds. And if we see a shift of that, some of that, even to public sector, is going to be a burden, isn't it?
Yes.
Are we spending enough on public healthcare funding? Because we already know of some hospitals, public hospitals, who have had or are going to be experiencing expenditure cuts, budget cuts. Where are we going to go with all of this?
Okay,
2020 is only 5 years away.
When the budget was announced, we got about 4% of our GDP for healthcare. And during that time, I complained that it was insufficient. Because if you compare to the West, they are talking like 7 to 10%, and some countries even much higher. We know we cannot afford to spend that much, but at least we need to slowly increase the amount. And now, due to the economic situation, we have slashed it even further. Therefore, we are spending something like 2.5% of GDP. So what happens is new things cannot be started. And now with the new circular about Public Services Department where they have frozen all new intakes of staff, we cannot expand our services as well. So whatever services that are there will now be further burdened, and the waiting times will get longer. We cannot do anything about that because of the limitation. We have been reassured by the various top officials in the Ministry of Health that medications and essential services will still carry on and it won't be compromised. And so far, I don't see any compromise in those areas. So we are still providing service just as usual. Only thing is we are slowly seeing our numbers coming in increasing. Mm-hmm. So what happens is this just increases the waiting time.
Okay. Then we end up something like the NHS with wait lists, you know, in terms
we
of
don't
operations.
Want to go there.
I know. That's bad news, actually. But, you know, I don't know how far this healthcare system is sustainable, this structure going forward. I don't think it is, because eventually we cannot afford to give healthcare, services for free anymore.
No, the thing is, what we cannot afford is we cannot afford to give free healthcare services to foreigners. You must understand, most Malaysians pay tax or contribute something to the country. So if we are giving what we call subsidized healthcare to Malaysians, I think every Malaysian will accept it. But we have a lot of illegal immigrants, especially, who come into the country and are actually occupying a large portion of beds in public health sectors.
But where do they go then?
The thing is, why are they here? Why aren't the authorities taking action and getting them out? Mm-hmm. Why aren't the countries of origin being responsible for their own population? See, we only came to light when you saw the boat people coming in and people making noise. We already had the land people inside the country for many years, and the healthcare has been stretched by these people, and we don't seem to have a solution. And if you come to a foreigner comes into a government hospital, and if they are illegal, we cannot discharge them until the immigration comes and takes them.
Right.
And if the immigration takes 2 weeks to come, they occupy a bed for 2 weeks, depriving a Malaysian of a bed for that 2 weeks.
Okay, so that's sort of inconvenience. I mean, we're not saying we want to deny them of healthcare, but it's just the way in which the administration of it, as well as the infrastructure around it.
You see, emergency care should be provided to everybody. We have no doubts about that, because everybody needs. But elective care needs to be charged. And this elective care, we need to have a structure in the sense that we need to put the responsibility back on the home nation to take responsibility of their citizens. Mm-hmm. Why should our country be burdened with foreigners who should not be here in the first place?
Okay, so that is left to government and government, a G2G arrangement. You need to sort that out.
Just to add, now we have our implementation of ACTA Fee 2014, where the foreigner to pay more higher than our Malaysian local. Okay, although in operation they have not paid $1 anymore, they should be paid 25 amount of money.
Okay.
They will be implemented only from the 1st January 2015.
1st January. Okay. Yes, not enough, I suppose.
No, it's not easy to collect.
Of course.
When you are there at the frontline person, you see an ill patient. It is very hard to make a decision whether this is emergency or not emergency care. And you err on the side of safety, and you tend to want to provide care to make sure that there's no long-term consequences to whoever it is. Because at that time, we're not going to ask you, are you legal, illegal, are you a patient or not? Because you want to make sure that the person lives through before going.
Of course. Yeah. Dilemma, isn't it? So instead of burdening the healthcare, we'll come back to the dietitian because we can eat healthy, right? Before we even reach that stage. But it is, in my opinion, it's very difficult to eat healthy in this country to a very large extent, Zoni, because it's expensive. The cheaper food, which is most unhealthy, is more affordable to the ordinary person. Would you agree with
me? Okay, I disagree. I mean, okay, this is so-called how we educate people and everybody know how to chew the food itself. Where we call it, what is really component of balance diet? Everybody, when I have a course for everyone, then I said, can you explain? This is 40 years old. Can you, at this moment of your age, you can mention to me what is really component of food, balance diet? Then I said, what is really balance diet? And they doesn't understand what is really balance diet. Okay, what it should be? They have called a plate there. It should be half of the plate. It should be full with vegetable, one quarter of that it should be only carbohydrate, and one quarter it should be from the animal fish protein sources, and should be also the plate, it should be plain water and also fruits. That is called, when you see the pattern of your plate, it should be, okay, I know it is balanced. I have more vegetable. I have been limited of carbohydrate, either from me, pasta or spaghetti or bihun or other. I have a part or quarter of that, the protein food. But when you see the eating pattern, is in the eating style of Malaysian, they put the rice there. So many, how many cup? After that, put on the top of the rice, so many protein foods, and sometimes two or three times protein food, and no vegetable. And they said, where are the fruits? Is it fruits? What is it? Is it a fruit? Is it a component of the diet? They forget about the fruit. That's why, to educate people, when they have to eating balanced diet, we should be start, when we should go for eating, we should start from, take the fruit first, take the soup first, and plain water, then continue with the rice others. And you make your food, your gastro of maybe halfly full. And you, Amira, asked me, okay, is it the food that it been health is been expensive? The most important is the processing food. Everybody looking for the processing food. But if you go to the nature, you have your fruits, your vegetable, aldersman, you can prepare very well, not highly ordered by phone call. Come, and it's only delivered 28 minutes already at your home, and you eat that one. It's not called healthy eating. That is really very costly. Sometimes they say very cheap, but it's not balanced. But if you know been how prepared a good eating that from at home, you can bring at office also. And if it's a cafeteria at hospital or where you work also, prepare this all thing, it'd be okay. The problem is they don't eat fruits, they don't eat vegetables, they're only looking for something eat with high fat, high cholesterol.
Because we're lazy. lazy. We don't want to plan our meals. We want the easy way out. So we ask for it, honestly. We don't realize we're going to be a burden to everybody else, the taxpayer who's
when they already have problem and doctors say, check their cholesterol content, their cholesterol already 8.3, BP is 140 over 100. Now you have to see dietitian. Now I should be limit all my diet. Then they have to follow also something.
Another area of concern, Dr. Krishna, is by the year 2020, we're expected to hit the 7% of an aging population, which we will be an aging country by the year 2020. Yes. And we spoke to a couple of seniors or some people on their take on growing older in this country, and we'll get your feedback after this.
Oh, I wish they would take more care of the old people. And to that, do regular eye check.
I don't think so. We are affordable at the moment because majority of those 60 something, some of them I can hear them complaining that everything is expensive. But I think at the community center, a lot of these seniors are slowly coming out. They come out, they get together, they enjoy themselves by doing light exercise.
What does that mean, Dr. Krishna?
Okay, the thing is, you must understand, we don't plan. We are a reactionary society. We don't anticipate problems. So that's why we are lacking behind in terms of anticipation. Now, if you ask a person who's above 60 now, what you earned and saved for your old age, was it enough? And the answer is most probably no. If their children don't take care of them, they will be homeless. Mm. Okay, but luckily our society still has that family values where we take care of our parents. Mm. And therefore we are not so badly off. But the thing is, we need to look. If you look at the age of retirement, it is slowly creeping up. And the reason is very simple, because we are living longer. Those days when you retire at the age of 55, you usually die at the age of 57. So you got 2 years of retirement to enjoy before you die. But now people are dying at the age of about 77, 78. But if you retire at 55, that's 23 years. How are you going to survive? Now we've increased the age to 60. That is still 18 years. Do you have enough savings to survive for 18 years? That's the question we need to ask ourselves. And the cost of healthcare will continue to go up. It won't come down. Mm. No cost seems to be going down, except the value of the dollar that you have in your pocket. That's the only thing that's shrinking. So purchasing capacity is dropping. So we need to anticipate. So we can depend on the government to a certain amount to provide certain amount of healthcare, but individuals need to look out for their own.
Of course.
So we need to know. So the best way to plan is prevention. And what one of me said, we need to control our diet, prevent non-communicable diseases so that we get to live a healthier life longer, not a sickly life longer.
Of course.
You don't want to spend most of your time in the hospital.
So instead of building new hospitals and new beds and, you know, worrying about doctor population, do we? What is an alternative? Are you just saying we? I mean, it's easy to say everybody go out and, you know, start looking after yourselves, but it's not really going to happen. I don't see it happening anyway. Not amongst the masses.
Yeah, because the masses, as I said, we are a reactionary population. We are not an anticipatory. We don't look at how to prevent things. We only react when something happens to us. So that is a thing that we have to change our culture as a nation. And we need to anticipate and protect ourselves before something happens to us. So prevention is one of the best. Diet and exercise is totally very important for everyone to mention. And that's why you get to live a healthier life. And you need to take steps and actions to prevent falling ill. If you don't fall in, you become more productive to the country.
Correct.
And you become productive to yourself to earn an income as well, rather than being sickly and not being able to take care of yourself and burdening your family. So we have to go back still to the people to look at themselves, to be more responsible. And they need to save a certain amount for their future. And you see, most of us, what we do, we save money for our children's education, for our children to get married. And then we say, okay, I've done my job. Okay.
Neglecting your health all that
time.
Yes,
and neglecting yourself.
We spoke to some people on the sort of changes they'd like to see in the healthcare system, and this is what they had to say.
I wish there was somewhere we could go to a forum or something like a website to sort of discuss the quality of the doctors that we're getting.
Wow. Level of service, for one. I think people go to private hospitals because of much better service, less waiting time, even though the cost is much higher. Apart from that, a lot more education, because I think some doctors are prescribing medication for the sake of prescribing medication.
We should encourage everybody to take care of their own health first before anything can be done. And number two, especially in the rural area, the smaller area, they should have more of this like all this community center where they have these health things that they can exercise and they need to pay a single cent.
Kalau bagi saya, kalau macam healthcare ni, bagi saya biar jangan terlalu mahal. Kalau ia pun kawasan ni dinamakan Damansara, mungkin untuk orang-orang kaya, tapi pada asalnya orang-orang kampung.
I've no idea for improvement.
Of course, if they were to charge those medication and the hospital facilities cheaper, of course, it would be better.
They have to consider some people, they can't afford certain medications. Maybe they should give like a discounted price or something, or like maybe monthly payment kind of system or something like that.
Dr. Krishna, I'm going to ask you for your final message on whether or not the 11th Malaysia Plan is going to make a difference to the changes that these people want to see. And, you know, it's pretty much coming through. The same themes, you know, cost, you know, seniors, quality, that sort of thing.
I don't think so it will address it completely because, as you can see, the population is growing at a much faster rate than our public health facilities. Building 6 hospitals will not keep up with the increased workload that is being faced by all government hospitals. I think if you go now, during a dengue outbreak, you will not find an empty bed in the public or in the private sector. So the number of beds in the country is grossly inadequate for our population. And we are not counting the foreigners again. And when you add them in, the number of beds is even shorter.
But we're planning to increase it to 2.3 beds by 2020 from 2. Does that make a difference?
It does increase. But you must understand, most government hospitals may declare 100 beds, but actually have 150 beds. Because we don't say no to anybody. We will find a space for you. Whether it's a floor space, an extension bed, a camp cot, we will find a space for you because we don't turn down anybody in the public sector. So in that sense, the public sector has been providing virtually free healthcare to everyone and not saying no. Only thing is, we cannot. We apologize for the conditions that you may have. You will stay in overcrowded wards because the workload is just too much, and there is no way that we can give care to you if we don't squeeze you in, because you won't achieve adequate care. So whatever that is available, we will use a raffia string and tie it up so that you get something out of it. Okay. And make sure at least your health is taken care of.
All right. So 11th Malaysia Plan will address some issues, hopefully. Fingers
but
crossed.
But not everything.
Not everything. Thank you both very much for joining me today. Dr. Krishna Kumar, President of the Malaysian Medical Association, and Tuan Haji Rizoni Sulaiman, Vice President of the Malaysian Dietitians Association, on the 11th Malaysia Plan on the Bigger Picture BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.